Today on the Inland Journal podcast, the second in our series of Spokane City Council candidate interviews leading up to the August primary. Last week, we presented Tony Keepy, a challenger to Councilwoman Lori Kinnear for the seat she holds in the council's South District. Today, we talk with Lori Kinnear. There's a third candidate in that race as well, Liz Fleming. Lori Kinnear's background is in broadcast journalism and public relations. She also served as a legislative aide at City Hall, and she's worked in a variety of roles for community and nonprofit groups.
I came on to City Council in 2015. 2016 was my first year, election year was 2015. And I had been working in the council office for 7 years. I had a head start. So I knew most of what to expect, but you never fully appreciate the job until you're sitting in the seat. I had some things I wanted to accomplish. The very first thing I did was to pass legislation around human trafficking. It's a huge problem still in Spokane, but we're putting more resources toward it, putting more eyes on it. We're cooperating with the FBI, the Sheriff's Department, other entities, so that we can really make a dent in this, because it is a problem all over the country, and it is growing, and we need to stop it.
And what benefits have come from that, do you think?
I think the passing the legislation, people are now more aware of it, and we've put up signs in the airport and hotels so that the concierge, the people that work in hotels, are more aware of what to look for. If they see somebody that they believe has been trafficked, they know, aha, that looks like a victim. They know that they need to call somebody. We've also put up signs in the airport so that in the bathrooms, so that the victim is then separated from the perpetrator for that length of time and sees that sign and knows what to do. So I think bringing awareness to the issue is the first step in solving a problem. I also worked and sponsored, and the council passed historic preservation legislation. That was huge. Prior to that, there really weren't teeth in any kind of historic preservation. And so we've got that passed 6-1. Brown's Addition right now is in the midst of getting their neighborhood a historic district. So they're working very hard to do that. Cliff Cannon is also going to be next in line, and some Rockwood folk probably will be next after that. So it's gotten a lot of attention, and especially for neighborhoods. Our neighborhoods are so precious here. They're unique. People want to live in an area that has trees, that has historic structures. That sense of neighborhood is important to people. And I worked closely with our neighborhoods and our neighborhood councils to make sure that we got as much packed into legislation as we could. I also worked on a protection of public lands and parks. Got that passed 6-1, and that essentially protects all of our public lands from illegal camping, cutting down trees or destroying vegetation, and harming the river, and illegal fires. So when you think about how much that encompasses and what happens here in the summer with our fire season, we absolutely need to make certain that people are not starting fires in our open areas, because they quickly spread and they impact the city, or could create another Paradise or Santa Rosa, California. So we don't want that to happen. And I'm proud that we were able to get that done. And right now I'm working on an urban forestry ordinance that will protect our tree canopy and, in fact, increase our tree canopy to 30% by 2030. So it is aligned with our sustainability ordinance, that 2030 piece and that 30% piece. I'm really going to continue to focus on public safety as we go forward. I'm chair of the Public Safety Committee. I work closely with police and fire and our COPS nonprofit. I want to make sure that people feel safe in their neighborhoods. I want to make sure that downtown is a safe place to be. And working closely with police and fire, we can fix things before they really get bad and work on solutions, not retroactively, but proactively.
How would you characterize where the city is with the homeless issue right now?
And let's make sure we define our terms around homelessness. So we have people who are vets who may have PTSD. We have kids that are aged out of foster care that may be on the streets. We have women who are victims of domestic violence. We have kids who may have run away because they're being abused at home. So that's a homeless population. We also have a population of people that are more visible, I think, to the public, and those are people that are actually committing crimes. Those are people that don't have a sense that they need to respond a certain way or behave a certain way. And those are the people that we have to target. If you're committing a crime, you need to be punished. If you require services, then we direct you to services. I have, I think, eight things right now that the city has either done or doing. The legislature has helped us by funding mental health beds and substance abuse beds, so those will be up and running. We're going to be opening another 24/7 shelter that has services directly there and is more in line with what we see as a shelter that has those wraparound services. We still have our sit and lie because it's a way that police can use to direct people to community court, which is, Spokane was the first in the country to do that, and it's a very effective system. So other communities are replicating that, and I think that's positive. I think that we are making a dent in homelessness. So 3,000 people have been housed in the last 2 years. The number is probably higher now. So we're getting people into housing. Until we solve our housing affordability crisis, we're not going to make much of a difference. We have to solve that. We don't have enough housing. And so we have to build more housing.
So what's the city's role then in creating the housing that low-income people can move into, that other people can move into?
And it's not necessarily the city's role, but we certainly can incent developers to do that. We can provide financial incentives or laws around code that can help them. Our infill ordinance that we recently passed is one way to direct housing around centers and corridors. And so we have transition zones between single family and multifamily, so it's not impacting our single family neighborhoods, but it's still directing people and developers built here because we have services and transit. So people don't necessarily need cars and they can walk to where they need to go. So those are some of the things that we're doing.
Is Spokane undergoing compassion fatigue, so to speak?
I don't know that it's undergoing compassion fatigue. I think that there are some people that have decided to change the message, and their message is, we're not going to tolerate those people, and I put those in air quotes, meaning homeless people, and they lump everybody together, and they don't want to see the problem. And I think the best way not to see the problem is to fix the problem, and that's what we're doing right now. And as I told you earlier, that's going to take time. It took a long time to develop, and it's going to take time to abate. Can't just snap our fingers, make it go away. There are things we're working on, and we see the progress. Perhaps we're not the best people to tell our story. We're busy doing the work, and the message isn't getting out that, yes, we're making an impact and we're making a difference.
They talk about syringes found in business owners' front doors and stuff in their bathrooms and that sort of. Don't they have a point that there's an issue out there?
There is an issue. We have an opioid crisis epidemic, and if you're breaking the law, if you're injecting in public space, that's breaking the law. And if you're caught, the key is police have to catch you in the act, so they can't just, you are strung out on a doorway. If you're actually injecting and the police see you, then you're arrested. The council did ask for additional police officers downtown because I think we need those. And once 2020 and the new officers after Prop 1, took effect, will take effect in 2020, five new officers will be stationed downtown. Council has funded over 20 additional officers since my time. That's 3.5 years. So I voted for 20 additional officers just in 3.5 years, and those have been deployed. So we're seeing that. As I said, though, we're trying to play catch up with the opioid and homeless issues. So we need to be a little bit more proactive in how we go forward with this. If we see people flagrantly breaking the law, then they need to be held accountable. And that's what the police are doing.
We're talking with Spokane City Councilwoman Lori Kinnear, who is running for re-election to her seat in the South District.
So let's talk about a new jail. I mean, there's a lot of talk now about the current jail is 35 years old. There's a need for a bigger facility, a more modern facility. There's also people talking about we need to do more to get the people who are in the jail, 75% pre-trial, out of that and into other places. Where do you fall on all of this?
And I think we need to identify exactly what we need, and that hasn't been determined yet. So I don't even the term jail, I don't think represents what we need. What we need is a facility that has diversion, that has treatment. People who are pre-trial should not be in jail. They haven't been convicted of anything. Why are they sitting in jail? If they may not appear, then they can be electrically monitored from home. And that's what the city is doing. The county needs to do the same thing. I think people need to remember that the county commissioners are the ones that oversee the jail. The city does not have a jail. And so we deal with misdemeanors entirely differently than the county is dealing with the jail and felonies. The county is also housing upwards of 140 federal prisoners. So that's contributing to our overcrowding as well. That needs to be rethought. And the jail, in my opinion, doesn't need to be treated as a run as a hotel. It's not a hotel. So we really need to think about what do we want and then model that facility around actual data.
Okay, so let's talk about growth on the West Plains. There's a lot going on in terms of Amazon Fulfillment Center and others. What's the city's role in making sure there's enough infrastructure out there, housing, streets, roads, that sort of thing?
And housing's not going to be going out there. That is an industrial zoned area. So that is reserved for industry. And the city's role is going to be infrastructure. Certainly, we're part of that PDA. And so, as is the county, and so we have a role as well. And we're working right now sharing responsibility with the county. So that's being crafted as we speak about how do we share responsibility, how do we share in the good fortune and actually building the infrastructure to make sure that businesses will be attracted to the West Plains. STA did build park and ride out there so that people who live in don't have to drive. They can take the bus out there.
Do you worry, though, that's going to exacerbate the housing shortage that we see in some parts of Spokane?
No, I don't. Not at all. I think that it's not just a housing shortage for Spokane. It's a housing shortage for the region. So City of Spokane Valley needs to build more housing. City of Cheney, Medical Lake. So all areas need to look at their housing stock and say, what do we need? How much more do we need? And what type of housing? There should be housing choices. If I want to downsize into a condo in my neighborhood, I should be able to do that. And right now I can't.
Let's talk about the city budget. Are you satisfied with where the city is right now in terms of how it spends its money?
Yes. We, for the first time in, I would say, the last 5 years, do not have a structural gap. And our CFO has been talking about this for years. And we're finally at the point now, because of where sales tax is, we do not have a structural gap. We're also putting money into reserves. That's important for the lean times. We know in 2008, that was an extreme period of time, but we are going to go through another recession. We know that because we do every few years. We want to make sure that we have reserves in place so we don't have to lay people off and that the city still gets services. The budget, whoever is on council or mayor, council president, whatever it is, needs to have a really clear head for a budget, $800+ million budget. So we're not dealing with your family finances. We're dealing with a lot of money. We have to make sure that we're responsible about the way it's spent and that we can really dig in and understand that not all money is alike. Some money has to be dedicated to roads because that is how we acquired that money. Some money goes to police and fire. So there are different pots of money and they can't be intermingled. So we have to be very prescriptive about the way we budget. And everything has to be scrutinized. We can't take anything for granted.
So one of the other issues is always traffic. It's always potholes. It's always that sort of thing. How do you feel the city is doing in terms of rebuilding streets, in terms of fixing streets. How are you feeling about that?
Two new things came up just last year that I was really happy about, and that is the alleyways that garbage trucks and people use to go down to get to their garages are being regraded so that you don't have the lumps and bumps. If you call 311, report a pothole, it will be fixed within 24 hours. Our streets are being repaired from the ground up, so if we're going to tear up the street, we're also going to tear up the infrastructure and replace the pipes underneath. Saves everybody money. And in addition, we're doing what's called a slurry seal over the tops of roads that maybe aren't quite at the point where they need to be torn up, could get maybe 5 more years out of them. So we're stretching our dollars a little bit more. Roads could always be better, but we're in an environment that is freeze-thaw. It's four seasons, and we have to sometimes take our lumps and realize, okay, we're going to have potholes. We'll fix them as soon as we can. But wintertime's tough, and you don't want to be fixing, then watching them pop up again, fix them again. And I think if you go around in the summer and see all the constructions going on, you know that we're fixing our streets.
What about that perception? I'm thinking of Monroe, I'm thinking of Sprague, from people who are saying, why did you cut down the number of lanes that we've got? And I've heard several candidates talk about that. Defend that point of view.
And I don't necessarily defend it or otherwise. When we got that grant for Monroe, the administration, the street department, applied for a grant for safety, and that was part of the deal. We did a robust public outreach for that street. We did surveys with property owners, business owners, people that drove through, the people that live there, and it was overwhelming that people wanted exactly what we have now. Not everybody's happy with that. And I think part of it is looking at Monroe and thinking, well, that's a major corridor. Well, we have a lot of major north-south corridors. But what's happening there now is that whole area is being revitalized. There are new businesses coming in. And if you talk to the businesses that are there, they're happy about it. Even the ones that were saying, no, we do not want this, and threatening to sue the city, they're quite happy. So I look at that and I say, I think that's a success story. You may not agree. They're called roadites. I call it right sizing in some cases. Not every road needs to be four lanes. And because it has been downgraded and right sized, it's more intimate, pedestrian friendly, and people want to go there and shop. And so I think that's a plus.
So you have a council that has six progressives, I would say, and one conservative, and there's a lot of talk about that ideological balance, that there isn't enough debate. The other side, the city is better off having something close. Defend that you've got six progressives. Defend that you're doing the best job in a conservative city.
Yeah, and I don't know that we have six progressives. I think that I do dislike putting labels on people. If you look at each one of us, we're all of varying degrees of these are our issues. And I don't always agree with my fellow council. And most of what we vote on, we vote 7-0, 95% of it. I also think that Spokane has become a more moderate city. It's not as conservative as it was when I moved here 20 years ago. I think people are more in the middle, and as a council, we try to meet them there. You're always going to have extremes. I think we have the two extremes on council. However, I think the rest of us are all shades of blue and purple in the middle. I think that to label people that progressive council or that liberal council doesn't give us credit for being thoughtful about who we represent.
Lori Kinnear is running for a second term as a Spokane City Councilwoman in the South District. Her opponents are Liz Fleming and Tony Keepy. You can hear our interview with Keepy at the Inland Journal page on the Spokane Public Radio website or on iTunes, NPR One, or Google Play. Later this week on the podcast, we're going to examine the growing interest in older varieties of fruit, especially apples, in the Inland Northwest. We went to a Heritage Orchard Conference last Friday in Sandpoint, Idaho, and we'll present some of the voices from that. Inland Journal is a national award-winning podcast and public affairs program produced at Spokane Public Radio. You can send your comments and story ideas to Inland Journal at kpbx.org. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Doug Nadvornik.